Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 328.1. That's right, a .1 episode. Last episode, we had no interview. We kind of joked around that our interview had to push because of reasons. He talks about in the interview, he had an injury that made him not able to do the interview that day. So I have it for you here today. Thankfully, we were able to reschedule and talk to Charlie McKelvey. Charlie's new issue in the Spider Squirrel saga is a 80-page Titan issue, hopefully to be a 100-page spectacular, and it is currently on Kickstarter seeking funding to become a reality. I'm a big fan of Spider Squirrel, big fan of Charlie since we met years ago, and just love the work and love what he's doing. And he's got some really cool things coming in the future for his Zion imprint as well. So I really, really recommend you jump on that bandwagon now. So enough of that. We should get to the interview. Before we do, remember everybody to follow me on social media at Fortress Chris. Like, subscribe, share, comment down below in the YouTube version of this if you will. And for all of you listening, please go to your podcatcher, your mobile reviews, all that, 5-star reviews. Makes you an amazing listener. And if you want to go the extra mile, it's Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. Enough of that. Here's Charlie McKelvey, everybody. All right, everybody. I've got another very special guest for you all. Returning special guest. It's been too long. Welcome back to the show, Charlie McKelvey. Welcome, Charlie.
Hey, Chris. Thanks, man. I appreciate coming back. And it's good to see you again, dude.
Yeah, you as well. I think there's been like two other campaigns that we've tried to do something with, and it always just falls apart. So it's really great to finally get you on.
This one didn't fare much better, because I jacked my back up this weekend. So I'm sitting here on my recliner, like full extended, like, oh, I don't feel like freaking moving. Like, this sucks. And when I rolled over just to get a back massage, I was ready to cry. I'm a little baby.
Back injuries are the worst. I hurt mine years back, and thank God it was just a muscle injury.
Yeah,
but it was the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life.
It's debilitating. I went to the emergency room one time because I had back spasms. Turns out the nice thing is that I had that problem because I went to the emergency room. They're like, oh, here's an anti-inflammatory, here's, you know, take some ibuprofen, whatever. And they did give me a shot to get me out of there, but I was all over the research, like, okay, I got to figure out like how to stop this from ever happening again. And this weekend I knew it was coming, but I had stuff to do, so I did it anyway. But yeah, the big thing is I found out I had really tight hamstrings and tight hip flexor muscles. And so I started adding more yoga and mobility work into my daily routine. And I've managed to not have any, I'll be 48 in 2 days. I've not had any back issues other than those minor little moments where it's like, stop moving, stupid. That's it, man. It's been great.
Yeah, when I went through that process of losing weight and getting, you know, start exercising and all that, that everybody's heard way too much about over the past year, but yoga was one of the things I added. And dude, for especially for the lower back, everybody out there, lower back yoga, it's amazing.
Like, 100%. Just do it. And stretch those legs, stretch those glutes, roll out your calves, all the stuff that gets tight. All it does is pull on your lower back. So lessons learned.
Yes. Yes. Good stuff. So
this isn't a health podcast, though.
We could. Yeah, we could talk about exercise and health, but this is actually a comic book podcast. So so Charlie, you've been super busy doing a whole bunch of stuff. You've had Zoop campaigns. You've had Kickstarter campaigns. Just pushing out the Spider Squirrel stuff, and you're back for another one.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the new campaign, Spider Squirrel and Trash Panda Titan Size Special. So what's this one all about?
This is so to date, it's my most ambitious piece. And so for those who followed along, you know, we did the first three issues, which was Volume 1. We wrapped that up in a 160 plus page trade paperback with all kinds of great goodies and director commentary and process art and gallery, a cover gallery that is like as thick as a normal comic book because we had so many variant covers, a couple of store exclusives. It was great. But this time we're back. And so with, I love this cover from Julian Shaw. We're back with this, and this is at least 80 page comic book. So what it is If you're not familiar with Trash Panda, Spider Squirrel and Trash Panda at all, Spider Squirrel and Trash Panda is my love letter to J.M. DeMatteis, Dan Jurgens, the Keith Geffen era, Justice League, those guys, famously from the Wahaha days or the Choco Cookie days, for those of you old enough to remember that stuff. But I'm trying to bring the fun back to comics in a different way. So everyone has their own view of fun. This is mine. I love the nonsense, the fun. Like I said, it's a buddy cop action comedy. It's a lot of fun along the veins of a Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. And this issue is, I hear Greedo. This issue is, it's a special, and we call it a Titan size special because it is an 80-page book. And it too is a throwback or an homage to the old 80-page giants from DC Comics and so forth. So those were prevalent back in the 80s and I guess 70s and 80s. And like that, there's a big main story. So there's a full 24-page story, Spider-Scroll and Trash Panda Adventure. And then there are at least six to eight-page short stories that are basically an anthological walk through the Zion universe. So rather than just being a random anthology with a bunch of just different things everywhere, these are all my characters, my universe, but other creators like Russell Nolte and Kat Kalamea, Kurt Belcher, and I can go right on down the line, Dean Haspel, they all wrote and created adventures in this book. And when all is said and done, once we hit our stretch goals and everything and cap off all the goals, this will be actually over 100 pages. So look forward to that. And that's no extra charge. So if you're backing now and you're thinking you're only getting 80 pages, we could go up to 100 pages.
So I apologize to everybody out there. We've talked about a lot on the show. Not only is my cat recovering, but my dog just walked in the room. And that was that that's tussle fine, you dude. Heard in the background. I saw the 80-page special, and then obviously I'm a backer, but
thank you.
Was looking at it and saw that you were going up to 100 pages here soon, possibly. And all I thought in my head was like those DC 100-page specials, yes, and all that. Like, I love those collections. And I've just really enjoyed the Spider-Squirrel books as they've come out. And I think, for first off, I noticed you've been kind of jumping back and forth between Kickstarter and Zoop. And I'd love to know the what's the reason for that? Like, why'd you jump over to Zoop? Why are you jumping back? I mean, what's going on with all that?
Yeah, fair question. So Zoop I have used twice now for the Milestone books. So God Quest featuring Milestone, which is a spinoff of Spider-Squirrel. I went to Zoop initially. So Spider-Squirrel's always been on Kickstarter, probably always will be. He's become a kind of a fixture there. And most of my books will probably be on Kickstarter initially, at least. But I really love Zoop's platform. I've talked to Jordan and a few times there from the group, and Eric, of course, via email. And I love the guys. I love the platform. I love the heart behind Zoop, because Zoop is everything that we're all doing. I mean, Zoop is the indie comics of Kickstarter, of crowdfunding, rather. And so whereas Kickstarter has the gravitas, right? It's got the pull because of it's 15 plus years old. It's got a long cycle of building up its community and everything. Zoop doesn't have that, but it also doesn't have the burdens that come with that. For example, one of the things I loved about Zoop initially was you go on there and it's like a shopping experience. So when I first checked it out, I was like, oh, this is really freaking cool. This is back when they were exclusive to like very specific selected individuals. And so I was backing stuff and I was going, this is cool. I can see my add-ons, which is... it was previously very inconsistent on Kickstarter. It's almost assumed now that you should put your add-ons in your story part of Kickstarter. I think eventually Kickstarter will have it on the front page, kind of like Zoop does. But Zoop, you have all your reward tiers, and then you have all your add-ons. You can see everything you possibly want to get. You can start mentally mapping your shopping experience right then and there. And the other cool thing is I don't have to pick just one reward tier. I could pick 2, 3, 4, 5, all of them. It doesn't matter. If they're structured properly, they're all different items and they just stack anyway. So it's just a really neat experience. I like that a lot. And again, as a backer, as a fan, like I get Dan Panosian's art book from Zoop. I just really fell in love with the platform. Now, is it flawless? Nope. It's still very manual on the back end. So I will say there's some, as a creator, there's some moments where you have to know that you're dealing with filling out forms on Google Sheets and you're uploading to G Drive your assets, and it's a little bit more encumbered because the processes haven't been built up. But if you've been on Kickstarter like I have for 12 plus years, Kickstarter wasn't always flawless, and it still isn't either. And here's what I really love. So forget all that. What, if I had to simplify it and say what I really like about Zoop is they're an innovator, they're a disruptor. And I work in disruptive technologies for my day job, but indie comics is disruptive. I'm like, this whole subset of the publishing arm of comics is disruptive. We have completely disrupted Marvel and DC, completely disrupted even the IDWs and the Dark Horses and so forth. And you can get smaller and smaller with guys like Mad Cave and Band of Bards coming out. You're seeing more and more of this invading the market. And it's because, comics has been stagnant for the last 60 years. Even with the indies, like First Comics from 40 years ago and those guys, Comico, there are minor disruptions, but I think today, because of what's happening with distribution and the direct market, this is an indie comics renaissance. So Zoop, like indie comics itself, is a disruptor. And we've seen results of that. Everett came in as the CEO of Kickstarter, and he's done wonderful managing the ship. I think he's doing a great job, actually. Everett, if you're watching, throw some bones my way, brother. But truthfully,
been trying to get him on the show, by the way.
He's awesome. I love the fact that he's interactive on social. Yeah, he's a great dude. Hopefully you can get him on. So Everett's done a great job, but you look at what's happened. For 15 years we've complained about, I know I have, about no pictures on the reward tiers. Like, come on, really? This is the simplest thing to add. Guess what we have now? And it's because Crowdfunder and Zoop and even Indiegogo have changed the dynamics, and Kickstarter has to evolve or die. And comics is seeing the same thing with indie. So anyway, there's my long-winded answer.
Yeah. I've used Zoop a few times now, obviously for both of yours and then a few others. And I think they've done 6 campaigns, and I won't call anybody out because I've seen the updates and I know why it's happening, but I've gotten yours and nothing else. So I don't know if I had bad luck with Zoop or if their whole fulfillment for the creator thing is just very slow.
And find out. Because I will say this, I did not go through Zoop fulfillment for mine.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm not going to say that's why you've got your product. But I'm saying, what I am saying is, I don't know how many of the other ones you haven't gotten were because of creators or because of the Zoop fulfillment. That's a great question. So I don't know.
Yeah, and I think my biggest complaint with Zoop as a consumer is their updates are really tough to find.
Yeah.
And they don't, and maybe this is just the algorithm for my email, but when I get an update for a Kickstarter, I get it right away and it's on my phone. I feel like I have to go on Zoop's website to find the update most of the time. So there was a couple where I'm like, where did this go? Because, one of them, I'm not going to say who, but I know the guy. I've talked to the guy personally. And I'm like, so what's going on here? And I look on this thing and there's all the updates of what happened. I go on my email. I'm like, where are the, I'm not getting these updates.
Yeah. And I don't know. And I think that's still some stuff to work out. And again, next time I talk to Jordan, just for whatever random reason, I'll throw that feedback to him if he's not already watching. But they're passionate about fixing those things for sure. They're also doing some other, ventures and stuff, and they're starting to branch out and grow the team. So hopefully that'll fix some of the issues you're having.
And they're also new. They are
very new. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing is I'm not asking anybody to be patient with them because I don't get paid by them. So I don't really, I don't have any investment in that. I use the platform just to help grow, I think, all of indie comics, my own especially, but also, like I said, to make Kickstarter even better. And so everybody has a better crowdfunding experience wherever they go.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess let's talk about the campaign right now. So we talk about a little bit of, what's going on with it and what it's all about, but how's the campaign going? I see as we're recording, I'm all the way down here.
Yeah.
You're not funded yet, but... Nope. I'm confident you're going to get there.
Yeah, me too.
Not over. How's it going?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about this one. We're 75% funded plus. We have, I think, 11 days to go. So we're kind of hitting the peak area there. You're seeing some of the free digitals. So every week I give away 4 free digitals to anyone who's a current backer for that week. So for example, today at noon Eastern, the week 3 stuff ended, and then tonight I'll announce a couple things because we just hit we went over 200 backers. So week 4, if you haven't backed yet, you're going to get 4 other indie comics, but everybody who's already backed will get each successive week's batch of new indie comics. So anybody who backed week 1 at this point already has 12 free indie comics. So
go ahead. And look, guys, I've never read Boston Metaphysical Society. I know I should. Everybody tells me I should. But 3 out of the 4 here, I can guarantee are great books.
Yep.
And I can't speak for most of these in week 2, but Territory, shout out. That's an awesome book.
It is.
So you're getting some good books. I can vouch for at least half of them right now.
Yeah. And I do try to mix and match. Each bundle, I try to put in a book that maybe I've not even read yet, you know, that's maybe a smaller creator that just haven't come across. So anyway, this is great. It's doing well. These are a few in-process pages. I just got some more today. The book is almost complete, and it will be complete, except for maybe some minor edits, before the campaign ends. And if I can get it done even faster, we're going to go ahead and go to print before the campaign ends, because I expect it to fund before it ends. So it'll give me a few extra flex days. And then I'll start delivering, based on the timeline right now, probably start delivering the week after Baltimore Comic Con. But if you're going to be at Baltimore, I'll bring the crap.
I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry. Animals in the house, man.
Yeah. I have 7 kids. It's the same thing.
So, yeah. So, for this issue, are you sticking with the same creative team that you've worked on the other issues with, for your story at least?
No. So, great question. It is one, actually, funny enough, not that you knew this, I was contemplating the shower. This morning, I'm trying out, this is Saul Chavanis. So Saul, actually, I have worked with for a number of books. He has helped with Milestone. He's done colors in Spider-Scroll number 3, and a few little shorts within this book even. And I really wanted to reach out to Saul and give him a chance to kind of do the whole shebang. So he's pencils, inks, and colors on the main 24-page story. And he's doing great work. I love what he's doing with it. There's a pose I just showed my wife today. There's a pose that he sent me last night of Spider Squirrel, and just this the angle and everything. It's so heroic, and yet he's still got that corny Spider Squirrel smile on him. So it's like this perfect image. But Saul is someone I've worked with. He's just not been doing the front side of the work. He's been doing color, which I think colorists get unfortunate knock for some reason. They're kind of the third tier, which I think is unfair. So he gets to do all 3, and I love that. And I love highlighting my colorists as much as I can, because I have some of the best damn colorists out there. I've worked with John Rock from DC, and just so many other great folks. Omi Remolanti, who did the Milestone number 1, which you had, we were talking about earlier. And then, of course, Saul is doing this. Now, on that note, I was actually talking to DC Stulpner, who did he did the exclusive cover, the mystery cover for this campaign that I don't know if you backed it, that one, but a lot of people really bought into that, the mystery cover. I haven't revealed it. I can't reveal it for actual reasons. The cover will appear in Baltimore Comic Con's yearbook this year. So they asked me not to share it at all until after the show. So until Friday, the 7th of September, I cannot share that image. But it's been really popular with backers. So I'm excited about it. They know DC from the first issue and the first volume, because the first issue and a half of Spider-Squirrel Volume 1 was all DC Stulpner. He also did all of the movie covers. So we did those movie parodies for issue 1, 2, and 3. And so everybody knows DC from those covers. They're really popular. He did this cover, and I can just tell you that it's a parody, but also good homage to American Flag number 1. So if you know that comic book from Howard Chaykin, then you know roughly what you're looking at from a layout perspective.
Very cool.
But he'll be doing all of Spider Squirrel Volume 2. So we did talk about that. I'm going to go ahead and finish writing it and getting it ready. And then when his schedule allows, then I will squeeze Volume 2 into whatever my publishing schedule looks like, just to make sure that I give DC his proper due, because he is such a great artist. And I love working with a guy. And it was only just by scheduling issues that he didn't do all three issues or a Volume 1. So, we had scheduling conflicts. That crap happens, unfortunately. But I did find Ariel Medel, who now is doing Turtles versus Street Fighter for IDW. But,
Wow. So one of my favorite things to do in a lot of these campaigns is to go through the tiers here. And when I was going through them, when I was backing it, I noticed not really, you don't have that big flashy tier. You're just sticking with kind of the basics.
Oh, you like original art tier, or get yourself drawn in the book, or
get the spider squirrel apron, or something. Oh, right. Something weird. And it seems to me like, other than, I mean, there's the metal variant, but that's not ridiculous for a metal variant or anything like that. But it seems to me that Kickstarter creators like yourself are kind of going on that direction of, here's the book, here's the covers, here's the maybe the retailer tier, and that's it. Did you put a lot of thought into that? Was there at any point a spider squirrel Lego figure or something that you wanted to throw in there?
I do have one, and I actually thought about adding him back in. I have one for Milestone as well.
I forgot how you did that, actually. That was a joke.
I was like, wait, were you setting me up, man? Thanks. I should have had you do that backstage. We do have a Spider Squirrel minifig that's out there, and he's currently available on my website, but I could add to that as well. The big thing is that I started looking at my campaigns from a couple. There's two perspectives that I think every creator should look at their campaign as. One, look as a creator. What makes sense? What doesn't cost you a ridiculous amount of money? Like, so those minifigs, for example, I mean, when I sell them at $20, it's a whole $2 going in my pocket. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive, low margin item that may or may not sell a ton of. Now, I bought enough to get my margins down a little better than that, but they sell much better at cons. So they didn't do so great in the first time the first campaign when I offered them. They do great at cons, and I learned that lesson. Same with the plushie. I had the Trash Panda plushie, and it's, they're expensive. Again, it's completely custom plushie. And, I ordered like 200 of them just to get at a reasonable margin. And, I've sold probably half of them, but it's also been over a year. And that's a combination of the Kickstarter campaign and then actually two Kickstarter campaigns that they were offered in, and then online sales, but cons are doing the best of that. So I look at that as a creator and say, okay, comic is the goal. Let's focus on the comic. Like, this is the heart of the thing. Now, if there's ancillary stuff, like you said, about metal covers, trading cards, metal bookmarks are pretty popular. Those kinds of things I'll offer either as a stretch reward or as an add-on, because they're not high cost and they're reasonable margin and they don't add a lot of shipping weight. So that's the one thing I have to look at. I have to look at the other side too. Me as a backer, somebody asked the other day, like, do you guys care about the extras? And I go, I couldn't give two shits about paper bookmarks or stickers. I really don't. I throw them in the trash half the time, or give them to my kids, because they don't do anything for me. They don't bring a lot of value. And what really drives me nuts is, like, when I get these prints that are like 1.5 times the size of the book, so they don't fit in the sleeve. It's not a standard size, so I can't put it in a frame. Not that I would probably frame some of these anyway. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And they often ship damaged. And so I don't, as a backer, I don't want that. And so I kind of think and listen to what my backers are saying and say, okay, think as a backer. And a lot of that extra stuff just is just that. It's extra, and it only costs me more money. So.
Yeah, I think personally, bookmarks are fun for a while. And if it's a book I really, like, I'm a huge fan of, I don't want to go there, because there's some books I really enjoy that I still wouldn't care about a bookmark. I almost think that a bookmark makes more sense for when you do the trade.
Yes.
Stickers are fun here and there, but Yeah, you're right. You have to be really connected to something to get a sticker. Once again, I'm not going to name names, but there's like a handful of books I would get a sticker for, or want a sticker for, or something like that. So it's tough because I understand as a creator and as someone on Kickstarter, you want to add value to your campaign and give a bunch of stuff away with the book to make it a big event. And I respect that and I understand that. And I don't know how we fix that now because it's kind of become a standard. And I don't have the answer to be like, this is what you do, other than maybe give me more comics, but I understand why that's not economically viable.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like the digital comics. You know, it's one, the community kind of reinvests in itself. And two, some of these books, like you noted when you were going through, like some of those books you've never read before. Now you're going to get a chance to read them. And not all of them are number ones. So you might enjoy something, go, oh, shucks, I'll go back and buy Bullet Adventures number one, because that was really cool. I like the art and I like the story, and that was a neat book. I like that. I do like to bring value to the to the backers. So I almost always do prints, but I do my prints at standard size. I actually have a couple of people who frame theirs. They do like these, I don't have one on my walls, but like a triptych frame where it's like the three, you know, in one frame, and it's a 6x9. It's a nice standard size. It's a little bit smaller than a comic and it fits in the bag just fine. It doesn't add any weight to the load, so international backers aren't hurt by it. You know, it's I like stuff like that.
I was gonna say that, and when as you're saying it, what popped in my head, and it's pretty much the same thing but a little different, is because I remember Marvel did this a while back, and so economics here might be a little off because it's Marvel I'm talking about, but special backing boards with like Spider Squirrel on it or something.
So cool. I would love that. You have to order a minimum that is really high.
I'm sure
to make those worth it. And so, yeah, that's where I kind of like, well, I guess I'll stick with the 6x9 prints because they're fairly inexpensive and they fit in the sleeve. So even if you don't really want them, they can stay in the sleeve, you know, who cares? You know, it's kind of the middle ground of what you're talking about, but I like that too. I think those are cool.
Yeah. I like those because I can put them in with the book, and then when I store them and I pull them out, I can still look at the thing, even if it's not something that's going to frame my wall. No offense to anybody out there, but there's only wall.
Nobody took any offense to what I said either. I mean, I think I love the free stuff. I just sometimes I look at it like pens are a great one. I don't collect pens, and then but I know people do, and so there is a value there. By the way, if you put pens in with your books, please, for God's sake, protect the book from the pen. I've gotten three starters where the covers are scratched or torn from the pen being in the same bag as the actual comic. It's don't do that.
Yeah. And same with keychains or anything.
Yeah. I will call out Carl Kessel's Impossible Jones as the good example of how to do it. He had his pen was polybagged. And then the poly bag was inside of a little bubble wrap bag that was on top of the comic. The comic was face down. So when I got it, like the back of the backing board was facing the pin. The pin was also basically double protected. So my comic did not come damaged. Thank you, Carl. What an awesome dude and great packaging.
Yes, good stuff. So you mentioned earlier Baltimore Comic Con coming up. You're going to be there. Yeah. So, I mean, you said a few of the things you're going to be talking about there with the cover. What else are you doing at Baltimore?
So I'll be hanging out with Dean Haspel, who I mentioned earlier, did a 6-page short in this Titan Size special. So if you like Dean, you'll love what he's done. He actually created a character specifically for the Zion universe. It's his character, my universe, art, writing, everything is all Dean. This is going to be fun. You're going to love this. I'll be with Dean and Peter Rostovsky and hanging out at Baltimore. And at Baltimore, not only will I have the mystery cover we were just talking about a little bit ago, but I'll also have some prints of the mystery cover. And then I am launching, I'm pre-launching a book that is not going to be coming out until next year. It's going to be an original graphic novel from Zion Studios. And I wish I had it with me. I wish that I had the foresight to grab it. I actually have coins, 2-inch coins. If you guys like John Wick, you know, they had the markers in John Wick. Like you get a marker, you're going to die or you're going to kill somebody or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind? Awesome. My wife's going to go get it for me. I'll show you. And it's beside my chair.
I'm not the only one who had somebody off screen say something to them today.
No, that cute little lady you just saw bouncing across, that was my wife. So we're here launching this. This is a project that is Zion's first mature audiences book. Being written by Anthony Stokes and Chris Moses. If you know Stokes from Decay or Intrusive Thoughts, he just did Tap or Die, which was a huge successful campaign for him, his most successful one. And Chris Moses, who has done Control Z, was his most recent project. He's also got I Summon a Demon. Wait, no, that was Pat. Chris has the one. I can't remember the title off the top of my head, but it's on Kickstarter pre-launch right now. But those guys are writing this. It's fantastic. I've got act one, the first 20 pages. We already started art for this. It's going to be an amazing book. This is the coin. I'll take it out of the sleeve here. You'll be able to buy these coins. And if you're familiar with like the Patreon model, you know, you go to Patreon and you might get some behind the scenes stuff for backing on Patreon. Well, I'm going to give you something physical. This really cool coin. The backside of which looks like that.
Oh.
And so for $25, you'll get this coin, and then you'll get all the behind the scenes stuff that we're going to be doing for the next probably about 10 months as we build this book up. So we're obviously not going to give the whole book away during that time frame, but a lot of neat behind the scenes process art, character bios, stuff that maybe it's throwaways that we're not really using, but gives you an idea of what we're going conceptually. I think it's gonna be really fun for patrons or whatever, you know, I'm gonna call this, but this is gonna be available at Baltimore. They're limited to 200. After that, it's just gonna be a Patreon thing with no physical reward. And then before the campaign launches next year for the actual book, backers who have the Sakura metal coin here, we'll also get the digital copy of the book as part of their backing. So a lot of great value for backers for getting in early. So look for that at Baltimore.
Awesome. So you're doing a lot of cool stuff at Baltimore. Yeah, that's a con I've never been to, but I've always wanted to make my way to, unfortunately. And what sucks this year is I know a bunch of people that I love and do good work out there are going to be there this year, including yourself, and I can't make it, but maybe next year. I hear it's a great con. Have you ever been before?
Yeah. So I've done Baltimore since 2005. Now I didn't go every year since 2005. Some years I didn't have anything. There's a couple of years I actually I left comics, if you will. I was doing a lot of Ninja Warrior and obstacle course stuff and really was focused on the athletic side of my life and building my family up too. But it's one of my favorite. If it's not my favorite, it's definitely one of the top favorite cons that I've ever attended. That and Heroes by far are my two favorites. So you gotta make it. Where are you located?
I'm up in New York.
Dude, it's like what, 3-hour drive? Bring your butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can explain to you off air, but there was 4 cons planned for the summer, and I've hit 0 of them because things keep getting in the way.
Been there. This will be my 3rd con of the year, and I had like 6 of my plans. So I understand.
Yeah, I went to MegaCon. So I was visiting my parents down in Florida, and I completely by accident scheduled it around MegaCon so I could go there. And then that was supposed to be the first con of the year in a list of like New England, New York cons. And I was thinking about adding Baltimore to it, and then just everything got in the way. So I felt bad. All the people I talked to was like, we'll go out for dinner at this one. And I had to be like, I can't go.
Well, I want to make it up to Terrific Con, which just happened this past weekend. Next time, that was one of the ones on my radar that I didn't get a chance to go to this year. So
I love that con.
Yeah, I heard it was great. And I watched Kat and a few other folks go, and I go, man, that looks awesome. I wish I was there. So I had FOMO.
Yeah, it's a blast. That's one up our way that if you can get to, I'd highly recommend. And it's like so comic central. Like there's a few TV, whatever people, but like it's really a comic con. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, Baltimore's like that too. Same. I mean, like last year they had a bunch of Disney princesses. You know, they had Jodie Benson and all these, you know, ladies for Disney, and they had a couple of TV folks. But for the most part, it was like all the big names were comics people.
Yeah, and I'm going to mention a TV name, but it's the TV name, everybody. Last year for Terrific Con, I was able to go, and lucky enough to get passes for it. And I got to meet Kevin Conroy, which is like the childhood dream come true, especially since, rest in peace, he passed away not long after.
Yeah, I know. Man, what a, yes, that's legendary, dude. I'm jelly.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it's a joke, but it's not. To this day, when I'm reading Chip Zdarsky's Batman, that's the voice in my head.
Yeah, I love that. There's iconic voices like that. Peter Cullen's up there for that, right? You know, for so many things. And it's just like there's so many voices. They're just the voice you hear when you read whatever. I want to meet Anson Mount just so I can compare my hair to his from Star Trek Strange New World. So hopefully he'll come to some show this time next year or whatever. But
yeah. So you mentioned off air too, Zion has some other things going on. Can you talk about them publicly or?
Oh, sure. I think we've teased enough on Twitter, so I think, or X or whatever the hell it's called today.
X going to give it to you.
Did we tweet it? Did we post it? Did we X it? I don't know. So I have just worked with Travis Hill. If you know Thorn, which came out from Advent Comics, amongst other books, that's his most recent one. You know, Travis wrote that, and he's going to be doing a book for us next year. Now, his book, I call it a pilot, so it's kind of, it's a one shot, but it'll also give me an idea of what fans are into. And I'm doing a few of these pilots in the next 12 months, where I introduce a character, we do it as a pilot, and then we'll see which ones are really hooking the fan base, and then we'll turn that into a series. Based on some metrics, polling, some informal polling, some official polling, and then, of course, what they do on Kickstarter or whatever crowdfunding platform we decide to use. And so we'll do that. And Travis's is important because Travis Hill's is important because I'll just tell you guys, I haven't said this on any other podcast before. I've already written the last Spider-Squirrel story, so I already know how it and he ends. And it's almost to the point of full script. And Travis's book is kind of the ignition switch for what will be the last Spider-Squirrel story. So that's cool. It's important. It's also, it branches out into further reaches of the cosmos. So our God Quest milestone went out into space, and we're doing some multi-universal stuff and multi-spatial stuff there, or deep space stuff there. This takes us even further. And so that's one. And then Travis Gibb, so another Travis, we signed on. What's that?
He's a bum.
Did you say bum? Travis, who has
Cthulhu. I got to clarify, because everybody thinks I hate Travis now. Travis is a good friend. I love Travis to death. But it's an ongoing joke that I just call him a bum every time he comes up.
So that bum is he's doing a character that I have been wanting to get in front of fans since 1998. In fact, it was a book that was originally greenlit by Eric Larson of Savage Dragon fame when Eric was the publisher at Image. But that's right at the time where things flipped and the Image founders all went to different roles. Eric Stevenson took over as publisher. Larson and Stevenson both let me know that, hey, everything's on hold for now. We're not approving any new projects, and yours is considered new because it's not even done yet. And so I get the kind of the kibosh. And then shortly after that, my entire art team got hired by CrossGen. So CrossGen Comics hired my entire art team. And I was like, son of a motherless goat. I was dead. So that's kind of what killed me for a while there. But this book has been out for almost 30 years. It's been in my head and heart. And I'm dying to see this character out there. Travis is doing it. The book called Eternus Requiem, the Death of Belief. And that will be an original graphic novel by Travis Gibb. And it should be out in mid to late 2024. And the final thing, and the one that is directly related to the coin I was showing earlier, is... I'll give you the full title instead of the... We've been calling it Project American Yakuza. And the reason is because the full title is, I invested in a corporation and went from an MMA level championship fighter to becoming the first ever American Yakuza overnight. Literally. That was the full title. So that book is an OGN being written by Chris Moses and Anthony Stokes, who's doing the bulk of the labor there. And those guys are putting together a phenomenal book. And that one's going to be, I'm excited. I am probably most excited about that one just because it's such a departure. Everyone thinks I do just stupid, silly, funny comic book superheroes. But, you know, Spider Squirrel was just the start. This universe is going to have mystical stuff, like with Travis Gibbs' story. It's going to have deep cosmic fun stuff that, like what Travis Hill's doing. We're going to have down to earth, low level, bloody, violent, but really, really cool stuff with American Yakuza. So you guys are in for a treat in 2024.
So just to clarify, these are all created by you, but then these creative teams are taking them over and kind of doing, pushing them forward.
Yeah. Three times this year. And I say it only because it's funny to me. It's very flattering, but different people have called me, you know, said you're like the Stan Lee of indie comics because all the energy and enthusiasm, all these ideas. But I was like, yeah, but I can't write all this crap. Like, you know, like, and I know Stan didn't write all this crap either. I don't think that highly of myself, but I do agree that I have a lot of ideas. I want to get them out there. And I think the best way to do that is to work with creative teams who can co-create with me. And that's how their contracts are written too. You know, it's okay to say, you know, that everyone's got co-creator written into the contract so that they will be, you know, hopefully blessed by eternally having their name attached to these characters and books. Because without them, they don't exist. I don't have time to write all this stuff myself.
So when the Spider Squirrel cinematic universe happens, everybody gets rich with you.
That's the hopes. I have no problem with that. You know, get rich with me, people.
Listen, I'll take a little bit of that too. Just
no, I'm excited. You know, I'm looking forward to working with more folks too. You know, I'd love to work with Charlie Stickney one of these days. You know, I got to work with Russell Nolte and Kat on this book. Got to work with Dean, which is a dream come true. I love working with Vito, Travis, Chris, and Anthony. I'm looking forward to working with those guys. Already loving working with those guys. You know, we've got some new art team members that I'm signing on that I've never worked with, which is great. New female artists, which I'm excited about. And there's some other folks, you know, Pat Shand. I want to work with Pat at some point. I'm sure it's going to have to be the sexiest book I've ever done. But
yes.
But, you know, it's fine as long as Pat's working on it with me. So we'll see.
I'm going to have Pat Shand do my autobiography in comics and just make me look so sexy the whole time.
Oh man,
it's gonna be a really boring book, people. Like, this is gonna be the book. He sits in front of a camera all day, he goes to work, he reads comics, but damn, am I gonna be sexy.
And that's all that matters.
So I know we're getting close on time, but I got one more question for you.
Ask away.
It's an important one. So you're a father, and every father has a favorite kid, don't lie. You're working with a bunch of people on this 800 page special spectacular. Which one's your favorite story outside of your own?
Oh gosh. It is so funny you ask that, because my wife and I were talking about this the other day and I still didn't have an answer for her. If I had to pin it down, there's probably two, but for completely different reasons. Dean's story is great because it's a fun departure. It's very Dean. If you guys know Dean's work from The Fox and Red Hook and Billy Dogma, which by the way is on Kickstarter right now as well. You know, Dean can get into fun and weird, and he does just that. And he pulls it off so amazingly well, like he did with COVID Cop. You know, I'm like, oh my God, what a crazy concept. Right. So that's definitely one of them. But one of the other ones. So Russell and Kat both did almost slice of life stories. Kat more so than Russell. And Russell's is a lot of fun, and it wasn't what I expected from Russell. So that's why it's so entertaining to me, because I thought it'd be a little more serious and, you know, something. It's what I thought Russell would give me. But no, it was really fun. I really love Kat's story. Hers is it's got superheroes in it, but it's a family story. It's about relationships. It really is a slice of life. It happens at a funeral. So we're in a funeral home for the entire 8 pages. And there's not a lot of superpower stuff going on. It's a human story, and it's really neat. And I love it because it's such a departure.
That's awesome. I thought you were going to say I love them all equally.
Well, I do. No, I can get into this, you know, because like I've got a story with Chris Bautista's art. I love Chris Bautista's art. And so I got to work with Chris. So I like it. Dream come true. And Chris is such an awesome dude, and his lines are phenomenal. I can go right on down the line. They got a Cthulhu-esque story from Anthony Harry and Morgan Quaid. I love that one because I got to work with an Aussie, and he did such a cool job. There's a lot of great stories in here, guys. You got to buy the book, back it, and you're going to find it's not just a bunch of blah-ha-ha-ha superhero stuff after the first 24 pages.
Yeah, and we didn't get into it in the front, but you said the magic word, and I think it's when all the chaos was happening behind me with a cat and a dog. Fun.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things I get out of Spider-Squirrel is fun. And it's something that comics desperately needs. So, and it's one of the things that we can't get into this because I know you're short on time, but it's one of the reasons that I started drifting towards manga in some ways. I still love comics, but yeah. I've been drifting towards manga for a lot of stuff because I get more fun out of it. And I know you and I have had back and forth about different manga books that we both enjoy.
Yeah.
So it's great to hear that that's still a part of Spider-Squirrel moving on.
Yeah. And you're going to find manga influences. Well, it has already influenced some of my stories and is influencing more. Actually, I started writing a Spider-Squirrel versus the Kaiju story. I was just like one of those stupid moments. Like, why am I doing this? I don't even know. It may never see print, but it was fun. For those who don't know, I've shared it with Chris before, but I love Kaiju number 8. It's my favorite manga right now. And 4 days from now, they're announcing more news on the anime that's coming next year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I told everybody, nobody sold that book to me correctly.
What, Kaiju number 8?
Yeah. So I read issue number 1 and everybody sold it to me as it's like Damage Control, but with Kaiju.
Oh,
I love Damage Control. Sure. No. It's what if Stan Lee created a Japanese superhero?
Oh, the only downside of that is he did with Hero Man, and that was kind of okay. That was kind of a mid.
Yeah. But it's what I mean is it's a Marvel style superhero. He's almost literally bitten by a radioactive kaiju.
Right. And here's the other cool thing. How often do you see a protagonist, a main protagonist at that, from a manga book who's not in his teens or early 20s? This guy's 34 years old. I'm like, that resonates, bro.
I mean,
I'm older than that still, but
as so, someone in their 30s, like it is, some manga gets a little weird, and I'm like, we're getting a little on the underage-y side on things here. Like, I don't know what's going on in Japan, but
it's always been like that, brother.
I know. I've been playing Japanese video games and everything forever. I'm very familiar with their culture, but there's times where I'm like, okay, we're skirting the line here, people.
Kaiju number 8. If you're not reading it, read it. That Sakamoto Days, Way of the House Husband, I posted about that last night. I love that.
I want to get into that.
People are like, watch the manga. I'm like, the manga sucks compared to the book. I mean, the anime sucks compared to the book. Oh my gosh, man. Because the anime is not really great anime. It's like, it's almost like a motion comic, really, which is fine. It's still good. But yeah, that's a great one. Black Torch, I just read the entire series of that. That's another good one. It's a younger protagonist, but Black Torch is really good. I recommend it. And you're a cat lover too. You're a pet lover, so you'll appreciate that book.
Yes, animal lover. I just picked up Death Note to everybody, so
I haven't.
Maybe started. In the next couple months, I'll read that.
Hey, Black Torch is only like 5 volumes. I think that's it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, short and sweet. So.
Dude, I just got into the first 3 because it's one of those 3-in-1 collections, but I got into one that's probably going to take me 10 years to finish. Charlie, you may or may not know this about me, but I love Pokemon and there's a manga.
I did know there's a manga. I didn't know you love Pokemon. That's cool, man.
So I just got that as well. Waiting for my cat to get out of surgery, I discovered a Barnes & Noble down the street. So I spent like way too much money on books and manga.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah. Charlie, thank you so much for being on, man. I really appreciate it. Before you go, share the links. Where can people find you online? I know you, like myself, make terrible life decisions and are on like X and all these other social media networks. So spread them out there.
Yeah. So right there in my name, you can see at Charlie McElvey. It's pretty easy to find me on most things except for Instagram. You have to put a dot between my first and last name because Instagram hosed me and killed my first account. And you can also go to spider-squirrel.com. You can check out my latest Kickstarter from there. And eventually when that Kickstarter is over, that page will revert to my regular shop. But yeah, please find me anywhere. Chris knows I'm pretty accessible. I talk to just about everybody, unless you're a total a-hole, in which case I'll just ignore you. So you're safe there too. So anyway, by all means, come check me out.
Which doesn't explain why he talks to me, everybody. But to everybody out there.
You have the mic.
Somebody finally said it. To everybody out there watching and listening, you know the drill. Links are in the show notes down below. So click on them, check out the campaign, check out the books, all that. I can promise you it's good stuff. So Charlie, once again, thanks for stopping by, man. We shouldn't let so much time go in between our interviews next time. So enjoy your night and best luck with the campaign.
Thanks, bud. I appreciate you.